want to talk about Mendel's Accountant. It's a forward time population genetic simulator. It emphasizes the effect on fitness of mutations as selection and drift acts upon them. But it also has capabilities to address some practical plant breeding issues. And just showing you, it's a graphical input, so it's fairly user-friendly. It got, there's several graphs that it outputs, plus some data sets that you, and printouts, so you can look at the details of the results. The web version has more computing power, but the Windows version is convenient, and both of those are free access, downloadable for the Windows version. It incorporates quite a few different variables. I won't go through all of those, and validation that we've been able to do so far has given very good results. So John Sanford, about halfway back here, is the director of the project, and he's also known by many of you as the primary inventor of the gene gun. John Baumgartner is not a crop guy, but he's an excellent programmer. I've been involved in the validation primarily, Wes Brewer's systems operation, and Walter Remine also in validation. So its primary objective was to look at genetic load in diploids. It's now being expanded to haploids and other things. It's very useful for teaching population genetics because it's graphic, the inputs can be varied, and John Sanford gave a paper on that yesterday. We'll talk about the potential for plant applications today, and it can provide insight into preservation of genetic resources. We have a poster on that this afternoon, poster 260, way back in the back, 4 p.m. we'll be there. Allows you to specify the number of linkage blocks and whether you have dynamic linkage with two crossovers per chromosome, just as a standard kind of reasonable thing, or free recombination between blocks. That allows you to compare with the theory better. And it has, the default is for mutation effects to be distributed by a type of exponential distribution with user-specified parameters, although the default parameters are there if you don't want to bother. It gives many near neutrals of small effect and a small proportion with large effects. But again, you can specify equal effects for all mutations if you choose to, and the user can specify the frequency of beneficials. And so here's an input screen just showing new mutations per offspring, the fraction of beneficials, the offspring for female, which is a surrogate for selection intensity. So anything above 2 is selected away. So 2 is your maintenance level. And in this case, there's 6, so 2/3 of the population is being selected away. Population size, number of generations. You can specify the fraction of recessive and the degree of expression in the heterozygote of the recessive, and independently the degree of expression of in the heterozygote of dominant loci. And there's two noise factors that enter in. One is related to genetic variation, and the second is related to non-scaling noise. You as breeders know that if you have a genetically uniform population, you still got variability. And you can vary the type of selection, probability or truncation. Selfing can go from 0% fully random mated to 100% anywhere along the scale. It allows for population substructure and the degree of migration between them. So the thing we're going to concentrate on today is the input of the number of initially heterozygous loci. This mimics an F1 allele, or sorry, an F1 hybrid situation. And you can specify the potential gain if you were to capture all of those positives in there, or alternately it can be specified as an average effect per allele. And so just a comment on the population genetics teaching There weren't too many people at John's paper yesterday that are in the room today, so I'm going to repeat just a little bit. It allows the students to explore mutation and selection and drift phenomenon in a graphic way. A couple of things that are interesting, it does point out very clearly the unselectability of near neutrals. Kimura's box emerges very clearly from this. And it shows the reality of the genetic load problem in a realistic input set. In any realistic input set, you can change a lot of variables and still have it show genetic load increasing, selection not adequately effective at eliminating those deleterious mutations. Raises some interesting philosophical questions. Population size, noise, whether all mutations are equal in effect or whether they're exponentially distributed. And here, just a quickie. Students can explore things like bottlenecks. So 2,000 generations of reproduction at 1,000 population size go into a bottleneck of 100 population size, drops the fitness drastically. Then allowing it to go back to 1,000 population size, it rebounds strongly, but not all the way. And so a lot of interesting possibilities in exploring that phenomenon. But the main thing to talk about here is the recovery of favorable alleles after hybridization, and the program in its current form only allows recurrent mass selection. It doesn't allow family selection, but still allows some interesting conclusions. And it allows the opportunity to explore the genetic basis of heterosis. Well, let's mimic crossing of two inbreds followed by recurrent mass selection using a population size of 100, offspring per female 10 in this case, so 80% elimination, 20% retention. Using truncation selection, that's what we aim at anyway, right, as breeders? No new mutations to confound this example anyway. Comparing 10 or 100 segregating loci, these are heterozygous for each individual, and then I set it to be completely codominant. That can be set degrees of recessivity or dominance involved. And the total potential gain then from selection, we looked at 0.1, 10% gain potential, or 100% gain potential relative to an initial yield or an initial fitness value. So how does predicted gain compare with actual gain among progeny from across? And we look here, the potential gain in this case is 1. The predicted gain, if you start with your initial heritability with the input noise I used, you got heritability of 0.35. For an individual plant basis, that's probably unrealistically high, but it gives something to compare with. And it shows that the actual capture of those alleles still takes 3 or 4 generations to get a fair percentage of that potential gain, and you're way over predicting from the genetic gain formula. If you take 100 loci, you spread that effect, and each one has a 1% effect, so you still got a potential gain of 1 total possible gain. You've averaged things, so the genetic variances drop down, and so the heritability is 0.22 in this case. The actual is closer to the predicted, but it takes you 12 generations to capture half of your potential. So it just shows some of the issues that we all know as plant breeders we face, but it puts some clarity into what's actually happening and what we're up against. So what happened there? Did I duplicate a slide? Okay. I'm going backwards somehow here. Okay, I'm sorry, hit the wrong button. So the answer to the question is that predicted gain exceeds actual gain, especially if you're capturing beneficials of any size at all. Next question then, how does the number of alleles and the size of their effect influence selection effectiveness? 10 loci, we're getting full gain, we're capturing all of it, but not until generation 9 or 10, getting about 40% of it in the first two generations. At 100 loci, if that potential gain is distributed over more loci, it's much, much slower, as you see. And now, if you reduce that potential gain to 10% and you spread it over 10 loci, it takes about 9 generations to get half of it. You're only getting about 15% of it in the first two generations. And if you spread it over 100 loci, the heritability becomes essentially zero, and your selection gain is nil, effectively. So these are the kind of problems we face as breeders. It's the effectiveness is greatly decreased when each allele has a small effect. We all know that. This just puts some clarity to the quantitation of it. We'd like to evaluate ranges of population size, the selection intensity, what partial selfing does to this, comparing probability selection with truncation, if you're not doing a serious truncation selection approach. Non-zero mutation rates, how fast do they confound things? A greater array of segregating loci. Another interesting one that John just showed me a couple of days ago, how well does selfing cleanse accumulated mutations? So 100 generations of accumulation of mutations, and then 10 generations of selfing, and the red is the fitness, the green is the genetic variability. So the red drops drastically at the beginning of that selfing because of the uncovering of recessive alleles. It bounces back a little bit once you've got things more towards homozygosity and selection becomes more effective in some ways. But then you again move it back into fully random mating, you get a bounce back, and you get a little bit of gain in the fitness from that cleansing effect. Again, we know these things happen, but it's interesting to see how it shows up on the model. So, final question here. If we're doing recurrent mass selection in self-pollinated crops, how often do we have to intermate to keep this thing going with beneficial effects? Or, alternately, something like sorghum or chemical methods, what level of continuing outcrossing is necessary if it's on a continuing basis to keep that thing mixed up enough that you're still getting effective gains? Well, the answer to that is we, or you, could evaluate that with Mendel's accountant. We haven't done it yet, but it's something we could easily do. And so the conclusion is that Mendel's accountant is a useful tool for instruction and research, and we'd like you to help us discover its potential. And so there's the website for it, and we'd be happy to interact with you on ways that you might be interested in using it and how to most effectively do what it can do.
Are there any questions?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the question clearly.
The question is, you didn't talk about
epistasis.
And you mean disequilibrium?
Linkage disequilibrium.
Did you do this on purpose or
We have recently implemented sort of a generic epistasis, but in plant breeding, epistasis is often very specific. And we're not really looking at specific trait factors. We're looking at a more statistical approach as far as, I'm sorry, the second part of your question? And linkage disequilibrium. That is not built into the inputs. Linkage is an input factor, but not in the way we have it, have the input set to be able to specify a specific type of linkage disequilibrium in the beginning. Yes?
Is it possible to model multiple phenotypic traits that are correlated with each other in order to create a selection index, for example, and then run this through?
Right. The question was, can you model multiple traits and then put them into a selection index and run it through this? This would work best by specifying what sort of situation and variability you have with your index. It would be hard at present to put in multiple traits that are correlated per se. You could look at what happens to the index itself, but not easily to the individual traits involved. Yes, John? The usable product is very recent, and so we're at a stage where we want a lot of people giving us ideas and helping us to upgrade this. Yes. Okay. At this stage, it's set up where the question is the heritability divided among 10 loci, and are they divided equally? That's a very good question. It's definitely an approximation to biological reality and not real close, but it gives us some insight. The way it's done at the present time is that each of those loci, well, there's an average effect specified, and then there is a normal distribution around that to give a range of effects involved in the process. And quite frankly, I'd like to see us add such that you can say whether it's equal effect or whether it's distributed some other way, but we haven't done that as a user input option yet.